This is Night Call. Broadcast live with host Russ Gibb and tonight's guest, William Powell, Deputy Director, Press and Public Relations for the United Nations. Tonight's subject, can the UN help people live together peacefully? You participate by calling Night Call's national phone number, 313-846-6601. Now here's Night Call host, Russ Gibb.
Hello, night people. This is Gibb. Standing by in the United Nations building in New York City is Mr. William Powell, Deputy Director of Press and Publications for the Office of Public Information for the UN. Mr. Powell is an ex-officer of the United States Navy and has been with the United Nations for over 20 years. As Director of Press and Public Relations, he is responsible for the daily briefings given to all reporters at the United Nations. Now, if you have a question to ask Mr. Powell, or you'd like to make a comment on the UN, give us a call here at Night Call. Our national number is area code 313-846-6601. Now, remember, you may call from anywhere collect. Please make that call station to station. Our Night Call number is area code 313-846-6601. And we invite you to join us here at Night Call. Our lines are open, and if you have a comment on the United Nations, please give us a call. That's area code 313-846-6601. Mr. Powell, what is the United Nations?
Well, Mr. Gibb, basically the United Nations is an association of now 117 sovereign states. It is an organization designed for a variety of purposes, but basically to maintain international peace and security and to promote the welfare of these nations. In a larger sense, the United Nations is a system of international cooperation which includes a number of technical agencies. A lot of them are known by initials, UNESCO, FAO, WHO, IPU, ITU, and so on, to do special jobs in fields such as health, agriculture, education, international postal, international communications, and so on.
Seems like a pretty wide scope for an organization. Seems like it's covering a lot of territory.
Well, this is one of the things that makes the United Nations difficult to understand. It isn't only new, but it is a fairly complex network of international cooperation.
Is the United Nations the same today as it was 20 years ago?
No, indeed it isn't, Mr. Gibb. I began with the UN just over 20 years ago. Then we had 51 member states. And now it's grown, as I say, to 117, with perhaps some more to come. It's grown from an idea, a piece of paper we call the Charter, into something that is tried and tested, by no means perfect, but is actually alive and working today.
A lot of Americans feel that the communists control the United Nations. What do you think about this?
Well, that's a very interesting thought that you've given me. I would say that communists don't control the United Nations, the capitalists don't control the United Nations, the socialists don't control the UN. I don't like these glib labels. The United Nations, as I say, is an association of member states of various political hues and complexions. Certainly, I don't think that any one group controls the UN today.
It's been suggested that many Americans have more or less become disenchanted with the United Nations today. Could this be because we no longer get our way in the UN?
Well, I think if this is true about disenchantment, there are various reasons for it. I recall back in 1945 when the Charter was signed at San Francisco and the U.S. Congress was ratifying the Charter, there was a terrific selling job done on the UN here in this country. Perhaps it was felt necessary at the time. But the UN then was represented as a kind of panacea for all of the ills of the world, regardless of where they came from or what they were. If we once got the Charter ratified and had a meeting of the Assembly or the Security Council, well, all of these problems would vanish. This was nonsense then, it's nonsense today. The UN is machinery, but it's got to be used, and sometimes it's going to work, sometimes it's not going to work so well. I think this is part of the disenchantment. You were saying about our automatically getting our way. I think it is true that in the early days of the UN, say for the first 10 years, be relatively certain of perhaps results in the assembly due to the makeup of the United Nations. Now, with the expanded membership, I don't think any great power is exactly sure of the outcome of a vote in the General Assembly before the debate takes place. I think this is a healthy thing, whether it's in a national legislature, a state legislature, or an international forum like the UN. The U.S., when it takes a proposition to the United Nations, has to make a case which is understood by Africans, by Asians, by Europeans, by Latin Americans, by all the other countries in the world. We're not automatically sure of the result of a vote, but I think on the whole we do a very good job in presenting our case. I'm speaking now as an American citizen and not a member of the Secretariat.
Well, now, how does this work? You're an ex-Navy officer and you're from the United States Navy. Do you still have your main allegiance with the United States or to the United States, or do you have an allegiance to the U.N. now? How does this work as an employee of the U.N.?
Indeed, yes. I'm still an American citizen. I'm proud to be an American citizen. I vote in elections, state and national and local. I cannot, just as a civil servant of a national government, I can't take part in local politics or in national politics, but I am an American citizen and proud to be so. The one thing I cannot do as an international civil servant in the course of my daily work here at the UN, I cannot ask for or accept instructions from any member government. In other words, if I have contacts with the U.S. mission across the street, they are purely business contacts, but I don't go over and ask them how to do my job.
Do you know many communists in the U.N.?
I assume I know several hundred. I assume that my Soviet colleagues, for example, in the U.N., are good communists, just as I assume that my American colleagues are good Democrats or Republicans. I don't discuss the matter with them, although occasionally, of an evening, we will have a friendly discussion about political systems.
What kind of people are they?
Well, that's a good question. I remember back about 1950, Gibb, when the Korean crisis was on and when we were still out at Lake Success, meeting an American couple in the corridor, and they came up to me and they said, do you speak English? And I said, well, fairly well. And they said, we've come out here today to see a real live Russian. Can you show me one? And just then I happened to see one of my Russian colleagues in the translation section walking down the hall. And I introduced him. And afterwards they said, well, you know, he just looks like any of the rest of us. And I find this is true. I entertain some of my Soviet colleagues in my home. I meet them in the office. I have lunch with them. I may have a drink with them after work. And we get along very well indeed. And we don't have drawn daggers or anything of that sort.
Well, do you ever discuss politics?
Oh, indeed we do. We discuss everything from the New York City election to Vietnam. And we don't often agree, but we do have full and free and frank discussions.
Well, are you a communist?
Well, if I were a communist, I wouldn't be working for the United Nations. I have had a full field investigation by the FBI, and I have had full security clearance. This is according to an act of Congress of about 1953. This is true of every professional member of the Secretariat of U.S. nationality. No, Gibb, I'm not a communist. In the last 25 or 26 years when I voted, I have voted for either one or the other of the major political parties of the United States in the national, state, and local elections.
You seem to believe, of course, in the U.N., and I guess we might say that you have a vested interest in the U.N., seeing that it's your employee. But outside of being an employee there, why do you believe in the U.N.?
Well, I think perhaps it grew out of my wartime experience. I remember I was discussing whether I would join the Secretariat in 1946, as I was then invited to do with my wife. I had been through 4 years of naval service, mostly overseas. I had been shot at several times. My career before the war, I had been teaching English at the University of Pennsylvania. And I was talking this over with my wife, and I said, Doreen, I think I'm going to give this a try, because if this doesn't work, I'm going to be back in uniform, and therefore I think it's something that I'd like to give my life to. And I feel that this is one of our best chances for maintaining peace and security in the world, and that's why I'm there today.
Our guest today, Mr. William Powell, Director of Press and Publications for the United Nations. Our topic, can the United Nations help people live peacefully? You're tuned to the Night Call Network.
This is Night Call, where you participate by calling Night Call's national phone number, 313-846-6601. Host Russ Gibb will return in 70 seconds with more Night Call.
Look, I'm quite self-sufficient. I made myself what I am, thank you.
But don't you think all of us occasionally could use a little divine or...
Gee, I gotta run. Here's my card, anyhow. I'm a vice president now.
Well, good.
Yes, indeed.
But your name, it's just penciled in here.
Well, there's a big turnover in personnel. You know how it is.
Uh-huh. Well, that's just about how it is in life, isn't it?
Pardon?
We're all just penciled in.
Where you get the idea you can make it all by yourself? Doesn't it get a little lonely sometimes out on that limb without him? It's a great life, but it could be greater. Why try and go it alone? The blessings you lose may be your own.
The preceding was presented by the United Presbyterian Church. This is Night Call, and here is host, Russ Gibb.
Hello again, Night People. Our guest tonight, Mr. William Powell, Director of Press and Publications for the United Nations. Our topic, can the United Nations help people to live peacefully? Now, if you'd like to join us here at Night Call, it's very easy. Just dial our Night Call number, that's area code 313-846-6601. Now, remember, you may dial us direct, and if you wish, you may make that call collect. Our Night Call lines are open, and our Night Call operators are accepting calls. So let's hear what you think about the United Nations. Our number again, area code 313-846-6601. Mr. Powell, I now have a caller in Denver, Colorado, a listener on KTLN, Mrs. Hilda Ross. Good evening, Hilda. Speak right up. You're on Night Call, ma'am.
Good evening. I've been interested in the United Nations since it was a gleam in the eye of Dr. Ben Carrington here in about 1928 and 29. And what worries me is how we can get this information to the whole United States to realize the wonderful work that the United Nations is doing, has done, and can do, not only for peace, but to all the specialized agencies. Now, one of the things that has worried me so much is that we have to realize this is one world. And I feel that Red China is acting like a spoiled kid who wasn't taken into the gang. And maybe I'm wrong, but I wish we could get the people in the United States to feel that every nation, small or large or communist or whatever they are, must be included in this United Nations. Because then we could talk with them, and I think it's ridiculous for the United States to be the one to stick their neck out and say that we don't want Red China. We're paying too big a price, slaughtering off all our youth and wasting billions of dollars which should be put into the United Nations to help the whole world raise the standard of living with the specialized agencies and work towards peace and not war. Now, how can we get the people in the United States to realize that it is important for Red China and all the countries to be in this club? This is not a snobbish clique. This is one world, and we have to realize this if we're going to exist. Now, if the charter can be changed, or some brilliant psychologist or psychiatrist or a statesman, there must be some way to fix it so that Red China can save face, so we can save face, and get all these countries in.
Well, Mr. Powell, there's several questions there. The first is, how do we get information to the people in the United States?
There are several questions there, Russ. And one of my jobs is to help the flow of information. Maybe of interest to you to know that we have at the UN every day about 300 correspondents who come in, and they represent the major news agencies of the world. Associated Press, United Press International here in this country, TASS of the Soviet Union, Agence France-Presse, Reuters, and so on. And I think on the whole they do a very good job indeed, and individual papers are represented there, sometimes with quite a number of people. New York Times has a whole bureau there, and individual papers may have a correspondent or two. But the job, as I find it, is a fascinating one because, as we were saying earlier, Russ, I've been with the UN for 20 years, and when I address a student group, I realize that I'm sometimes talking to students who have been born since the ratification of the Charter, so it's a never-ending job. I'd like to go on to what Mrs. Ross was saying about the question of the admission of mainland China to the UN. This is not a question of the admission of a new member state. It's a question of the representation of a country that's already in the UN. And it's one of the questions that has been before the General Assembly in one form or another now for about 15 years. It's going to come up again in the next fortnight, and it is a question of what government represents one of the major powers in the world. Now, as a member of the Secretariat, I can't predict or I can't take sides on this. But for a number of years, it was the policy of the United States not even to have this matter discussed in the General Assembly. And there was a resolution every year that the question of the representation of China would not come before this or that session of the UN. In more recent times, however, the U.S. has agreed to a full discussion, a full debate on this question of which government should represent the country of China. And we're going to have this early in November. Our Secretary General has taken a public position on several occasions that, particularly now that China is a major nuclear power, that we should have China around the council tables of the world, that we cannot have realistic discussions on disarmament, for example, if one of the major nuclear powers is not included in the discussion.
Mrs. Ross, you had a comment.
Yes, I wanted to know why the nationalist China can't be in it, too. And I can't see any reason why they can't be in it. It seems to me there must be some subtle or some way that someone can figure out how to get both of them, have them both in. And if we can't have them both in, I understand that Red China was in from the beginning and then Nationalist China broke away. It seems pretty foolish to cut off our noses to spite our face if it comes to that. But it seems to me that if we really did it in the proper way and changed the charter or something so that two nations could be in the charter somehow and save face for everybody.
Mr. Powell?
We've got to do it whether we want to or not, or we're all going to be destroyed.
Mr. Powell?
Yes, indeed.
Is there a way that we can bring about
a lot of people have been thinking in this direction, the one that Mrs. Ross is thinking. It has sometimes been known as the, quote, two Chinas policy, unquote. This has been suggested that there should be a seat for the government in Peking and the government on Formosa. The difficulty here is that the nationalist government insists that it is the sole and representative government of all of China, and the People's Republic of China in Peking insists that it is the sole and representative government of the whole of China. And so up to the present time, neither government has accepted the so-called two Chinas solution to the question of the representation in the UN. I would point out to Mrs. Ross that from the beginning, from 1945 onward, China has been represented in the United Nations by the government which is now located at Taipei in Formosa.
Mrs. Ross, I want to thank you for calling Night Call.
One of the main arguments of why we haven't been able to get to the peace table has been that Red China and Hanoi are not in the United Nations.
And that's quite correct. That the Peking government is not represented yet in the United Nations, and I was saying earlier that among the suggestions that our Secretary General has made, particularly in connection with disarmament, is that now that mainland China is a nuclear power, that eventually it should have representation in the UN.
I think that it shouldn't be up to the president or a few people who are against it for I don't know what reasons. I think they should take a vote of all the United States and all the people in America and see what we think about it. Do we want peace in the world, or do we want to cut off our noses to spite our faces?
Well, Mrs. Ross, we have other callers waiting to get on Night Call.
Thank you very much.
And thank you for calling us.
You're welcome.
Mrs. Hilda Ross from Denver, Colorado, a listener on KTLN. And Mr. Powell,
Mr. William Powell, he's Director of Press and Publications for the United Nations, is our guest tonight. And we have a caller in Baltimore, Maryland now, a listener on WBAL, Mr. William Winchester. Good evening, William. Speak right up, sir. You're on night call. Hello, Bill.
Yeah, I'm here.
Your comment, please. Bill, you'll have to tune your radio down or you're going to find it's delayed and it's going to confuse you.
I'm not worried about that.
Okay.
I didn't get it turned off.
Okay.
Who is the man I'm talking to?
Mr. William Powell. He's Director of Press and Publications for the United Nations.
All right. Can he respond to me over the telephone?
Yes, sir. Can you hear me?
I refer to two things. One, the academic question asked you, are you a communist? This was in the period before calls started to come in.
That's right.
You said no. We here in the United States have come under the impression that even if you were, you would have many words to tell us you're not.
Well, now, what can I do to prove I'm not a communist, if this is relevant to the discussion?
It's an academic question. As far as we know it, we have found so far that this question can be asked, and if you're not a communist, you're going to answer honestly, no. If you are a communist, you're going to answer dishonestly, no.
Well, all I can say on this one is, as I said earlier, all the American members of the Secretariat, before they're appointed, and this began in 1953, so all of us who were working for the UN then had a full-field investigation by the FBI.
All right. But at that time, we didn't think we had any in the State Department, okay?
I don't know that.
Okay, all right. Okay, this is to me, it was an academic question.
Right.
There was a warm-up session. Are you a communist? You said no and gave reasons no.
Sure.
Okay. Secondarily, may I express a personal opinion?
That's what we're here for.
All right. This is a personal opinion program. It is my personal opinion that Joseph Stalin, Mr. Khrushchev, no matter what you have, Chuan Lai, but no matter what you have, this is a personal opinion, remember.
Sure.
That they are striving for the ultimate solution to our human problems today, and just because we differ on how to achieve those solutions is not important. We should be in a worldwide conclave, and the UN is the only basis on which we can meet on that basis.
Mr. Powell? We hear
time and time again from America. UN. No, we can't have that. It's not enough American enough.
Well, I would agree with you that we're all looking for common solutions to problems. We may have different approaches in our national lives, but ultimately we're all going to succeed or fail together. If the missile does go off...
Get together and meet together.
Yes.
Then that's ipso facto means China in. Let them come out and speak their peace before all the world instead of through fighting. Let them in.
Well, I'm a great believer in discussion among all peoples, and I think this is one of the important functions of the UN is a kind of world safety valve, you know.
Yeah, sure. And there's an established government of many millions of people. Let them, if they want to, let them come into the UN and let them speak their peace in front of the world and not fighting the world.
Well, Bill, we have to break the stations now, and I want to thank you for your comments, and thank you for calling Night Call.
Just a personal opinion.
Well, we appreciate your opinion, Bill.
All right, thank you.
Good night. Mr. William Winchester from Baltimore, Maryland, listener on WBAL.
Our guest tonight on Night Call, Mr. William Powell, Director of Press and Publications for the United Nations. Our topic... Can the United Nations help people to live peacefully? You're tuned to the Night Call Network.
This is Night Call, where you participate by calling Night Call's national phone number, 313-846-6601. host Russ Gibb will return in 70 seconds with more Night Call.
Well, I can't this Sunday. I'm playing golf, and the following Sunday I promise to take the kids to the beach.
Uh-huh.
Man's got to spend some time with his kids, you know.
Yeah, sure.
Besides, we seem to get along just fine without church. You know, it's up to the individual. Gee, look at the time. I got to run. But anyhow, we'll trot along to church one of these days.
Uh-huh. Well, how about 2 weeks from Sunday?
Oh, I never planned that far ahead. 2 weeks, the whole world could blow up by then.
That's right.
Where you get the idea you could make it all by yourself? Doesn't it get a little lonely sometimes out on that limb without him? It's a great life, but it could be greater. Why try and go it alone? The blessings you lose may be your own.
The preceding was presented by the United Presbyterian Church. This is Night Call, and here is host, Russ Gibb.
Hello again, Night People. Our guest tonight is Mr. William Powell, Director of Press and Publications for the United Nations. Our topic on Night Call, can the United Nations help people to live peacefully? And if you'd like to join us here at Night Call or express your opinion on our topic, can the United Nations help people to live peacefully, give us a buzz at area code 313-846-6601. Dial us direct if you wish, and you may make that call collect. You may reverse the charges. Our Night Call lines are open, and we await your call here. Our Night Call number, area code 313-846-6601. And we have a lot of callers, Mr. Powell, from Baltimore tonight. I wonder where the people are in Indianapolis. I'm sure they have some opinions on the UN. Let's go then, Mr. Powell, to Baltimore, Maryland again, a listener on WBAL, Mr. Mike Nelson. Good evening, Mike. Speak right up. You're on Night Call.
I'd like to ask the guest tonight about out of all the states in the U.N., how many of them are affiliated with the Communist Party?
Bill?
Hello. I couldn't quite get that, Roger.
Of all
many,
the
states... How many states are affiliated with the Communist Party?
Yes,
in
the U.N., out of the total membership.
Well, that's difficult for me to say, because you have your Eastern European group of about 11 countries, which are traditionally part of the so-called communist group. But beyond that, I can't say how many countries of the rest of the world may or may not have, as we might say, leanings toward communism. We don't take that kind of a census in the U.N.
I got another one. How is each vote weighed out of all the countries?
We don't have any weighted votes in the U.N. itself. Now, in some of the agencies of the U.N., such as the International Bank, there is weighted voting based on the contribution of the country to the finances of the bank. But in the U.N., each country, large or small, by geography or by population, has one vote.
Now, that's in the General Assembly or the
that
Security?
That is in all of the committees or commissions or councils of the U.N., including the General Assembly. I might go on to say that this sometimes seems absurd to people that a country, let us say, the size of Iceland and a country the size of the United States has the same vote. But there's one thing that should be remembered. In the General Assembly, we're not passing laws and we're not issuing orders. These votes in the General Assembly are recommendations. And one of the first things that a new country learns when it comes to the U.N. is that, sure, a group of small states can get together if they wish and pass a resolution in the General Assembly. But it's going to be effective only if those countries that can carry out the resolution, whether it's a matter of political power or finances or whatever it is, that it is important for the countries that really can carry out the resolution to vote for it. And this builds in an inner discipline in the voting.
Mike, did Mr. Powell answer your question?
Right up.
Okay, thank you for calling Night Call. Mr. Mike Nelson from Baltimore, Maryland, a listener on WBAL. And we're going right back out to Baltimore. And another listener on WBAL, Mr. Walter Ford. Good evening, Walter. Your comment, please, sir.
I can't hear you.
Yes, sir.
Could you speak a little louder, please?
We can hear you fine, Walter. Will you make your comment, please?
Yes, I'd like to ask Mr. Powell why the United Nations makes such a to-do over the imminent declaration of independence in southern Rhodesia, and why they've ever made such a loud furor over the Chinese occupation of Tibet.
Hello, Russ. I couldn't quite get that.
He was concerned about the... why there seems to be such an ado about the impending breakaway of Rhodesia. And there seems to be a lot of debate going on in the UN about this. But when the Chinese, the Red Chinese, took over Tibet, we heard hardly a mumble.
I'm sorry, I can't hear you.
I wonder whether you can hear me now. Indeed, we have been concerned with both problems. For a number of years, in fact, it may come up again this year. The question, as we put it, the question of Tibet has been on the agenda of the General Assembly and has been discussed by the member states. The question of southern Rhodesia is obviously of importance now. It's not being discussed today or tomorrow. We're actually awaiting the results of Mr. Wilson's trip to Salisbury. But here you have a critical problem in the heart of Africa that is concerning a large number of states. Here's a very small minority of white settlers, I think about 220,000 of them, about to declare independence, and you have a native population of some 4 million. This is, in the view of many member states, a potential threat to international peace and security.
We just lost Mr. Ford there. I'm sorry. We had a very poor connection.
Yes, I had difficulty in hearing, Russ.
Mr. Ford, I'm sorry about that connection, and if you'll redial, if we can get you back on, we certainly will. Let's go now to Mr. Bill Johnson, a gentleman from Indianapolis, Indiana, listening on WFBM. Hello, Bill. Speak right up. You're on night call, sir.
Mr. Powell, I'd like to direct my questions to you personally as a representative of the United States to the United Nations. When did you join the United Nations, Mr. Powell?
Well, let me make a point. I am not a representative of the United States. I work for the International Secretariat. I don't work for the U.S. mission to the U.N.
I see.
But I joined back. Actually, I was working for the United Nations on loan from the U.S. Navy back in 1945. But I moved over actually into the Secretariat. That is, I took my oath of office and so on in 1946.
I see. May I make a quote to you from The Fearful Master, which is a second look at the United Nations by G. Edward Griffin, which states, a former communist, Mr. Joseph Z. Kornfelder, who trained in Moscow, I'm quoting, and who specialized in methods of communist political warfare in this country, spoke before the Congress of Freedom in 1955 and told his audience, quote, how many communist fellow travelers and sympathizers there are among the UN employees, no one seems to know. But judging by their number among the American personnel, there can be no doubt that the communists control the UN and its staff association and use it for all it's worth, which means that most of the special agencies at UN headquarters are, in fact, operated by them and coordinated through the communist cell and the UN Staff Association, unquote. And I'd like to ask you one question. Was Mr. Alger Hiss the major builder, architect of the United Nations for the U.S., and was he also convicted as a communist?
Well, I'm glad to discuss that with you. First of all, as I was saying a little earlier, now, every American employee of the United Nations Secretariat, before he is accepted in a job, and back, this is dated since 1953, so all of the previous employees went through a full field investigation of the FBI. In fact, when we're recruiting people now to go out on special jobs, let us say, in medicine or in communications or in agriculture, if we're going to send them overseas, one of the problems we have in recruiting American personnel is the delay, the time it takes to get these people cleared. It's quite an extensive process, the full field investigation of the FBI. Now, about Alger Hiss. Alger Hiss was not a member of the American delegation to the San Francisco conference that wrote the UN Charter. Mr. Alger Hiss was described as the Secretary General of that conference. I wasn't there at the time. I was in the American Navy in London. At the time, I was stationed in London. But I've had occasion to look into this question. It's been put to me before. What was Mr. Hiss's role at the San Francisco conference? He was the chief administrative officer of that conference. He went out prior to the arrival of the various delegations. As you will recall, the conference was held in the Opera House and in the Veterans Memorial Hall there.
Yes.
He had the job of setting it up, of hiring the translators, paying the staff. He was not a member of the U.S. delegation. He did not sign the charter. He did not write it.
Uh-huh.
And I believe that he was convicted. I'm not sure. I think the official charge against him was that of perjury.
Let me quote Mr. Edward Griffin.
Bill?
Yes.
Bill, I want you to tell me. I want to stay away from, quotes out of books. You tell me what, in your words, what the fella said. Okay, Bill?
Fine. Okay. Good enough. Let me ask a question then. And I'm staying away from quotes. I'd like to know, since the inception of the UN Office of Undersecretary General for Political and Security Council Affairs, which coordinates all military disarmament and atomic energy matters of the Security Council, has this office been held by an open communist from a communist country since the inception of the United Nations?
Right. Now, Bill, you're quite correct in saying that a Soviet citizen has held the job of Undersecretary for, as we call it, Political and Security Council
Not
Affairs.
A Soviet citizen, a communist.
What?
An open communist from a communist...
I am saying that a Soviet citizen has held this position. He is a secretariat member from the Soviet Union. You're quite right.
Mm-hmm.
But I would point this out, that the way that you have defined this office is a little broad. When you say coordinates disarmament, atomic energy, and Security Council affairs, no one undersecretary does all this. I would also point out that at the same time, to balance this, we have always had an undersecretary for special political affairs who is a U.S. citizen. At the present time is Dr. Ralph Bunche, who is handling such matters as Pakistan, Kashmir.
To this individual who has the final say-so as the chief architect of this particular position, doesn't he?
No, sir. He is simply one of the secretariat members responsible to the Secretary General.
I see. Let me ask one more question, and I'll thank you for your time.
Sure.
The man in charge of the U.S. government department which designed the U.N. emblem, was he a secret member of the Communist Party?
I do not know who designed the U.N. emblem in the U.S. government, because the U.N. emblem was actually designed by us in the Secretariat. Well, there was an emblem used at San Francisco, which is similar to our emblem. And at that time, the zero meridian ran down through New York. But this looked a little controversial to some of the people in the UN, and so we turned it around and made it the traditional zero meridian that runs through Greenwich, England. And that was actually our design.
Yes.
Bill, I want to thank you.
I have one more question, and I'll call it, and I'll be...
Okay, we got about 30 seconds, Bill.
Fine. Was Harry Dexter White and Lytton Curry, did they both help formulate the United States policy on the United Nations? And also, was White promoted in the Treasury Department by Mr. Truman after the FBI exposed him as a Soviet agent? And Curry, aide to FDR, did he pass secret wartime information to the Russians?
Now, this goes way outside my sphere of competence. I don't know anything about the two gentlemen. I don't think they were ever members of the Secretariat. And I guess some of this goes back before the days of the UN. I'm sorry.
Thank you very much, Mr. Powell. I appreciate your time.
Okay.
Thank you, Bill. Mr. Bill Johnson from Indianapolis, Indiana, listener on WFPM. Our guest tonight is Mr. William Powell, Director of Press and Publications for the United Nations. Our topic, can the United Nations help people to live peacefully? You're tuned to the Night Call Network.
This is Night Call, where you participate by calling Night Call's national phone number, 313-846-6601. Host Russ Gibb will return in 70 seconds with more Night Call.
Busy America, busy America, busy making money, busy buying gadgets, busy keeping up with the you-know-who.
Is that your idea of fulfillment? Don't you wonder if there's more to life than just that rat race with no finish line?
Where'd you get the idea you could make it all by yourself? Doesn't it get a little lonely sometimes out on that limb without him?
It's a great life, but it could be greater. Why try and go it alone? The blessings you lose may be your own.
The preceding was presented by the United Presbyterian Church. This is Night Call, and here is host, Russ Gibb.
Hello again, Night People. Our guest tonight is Mr. William Powell, Director of Press and Publications for the United Nations. Our topic, can the United Nations help people to live peacefully? And if you'd like to call us here at Night Call, our lines are open. Give us a buzz. It's area code 313-846-6601. Now remember, you may call from anywhere collect. Please make that call station to station. The number is area code 313-846-6601, and we'd like to hear from you on the UN. Mr. Powell, I have a caller in Tennessee, a listener on WFBM, Mr. William Corney. Good evening, William. Speak right up. You're on Night Call, sir.
I've heard, Mr. Powell, many people say that the UN is an ineffective organization, and I've also heard comments with respect to the fact that the UN should get out, other sorts of things like this. Now, as an insider, personally, I wonder what your views are towards the future of the UN, whether you envision a great future for the UN, and if you do, I sort of think that you do, and if you do, exactly why? What are the indicators that you might that might tend to give you this belief?
Well, the way I feel about this is, here is the forum that we have. Whether we are a very large country or a very small one, a very rich one, or a very poor one. And more problems in the world today cannot be settled just by a cozy chat between the White House and the Kremlin. We're all involved, regardless of the flag we salute or the color of our skin. And we're all in it, live or die, succeed or fail. And we need a forum where problems can be discussed continuously, problems that involve Asia or Africa or Latin America or North America, wherever it is. This, I think, is the real reason for the United Nations. Some people have asked me, why, what does the U.S. get out of the U.N.? Not why should they get out, but what do we get out of it? What is the result of our being there? And I say, ultimately, the reason that we're there is that if the bomb does go off or if the missiles do fly, who in material terms has the most to lose? And the UN, over a period of 20 years, has built up an experience and a record in either keeping the brush fires of international relations from breaking out, or if they do break out, in controlling them and quenching them. Remember, we've got, say, 5,000 men between Egypt and Israel in the Middle East today along a comparatively quiet border. We've got another 5,000 men on duty on the troubled island of Cyprus. We've got observers tonight along the borders between India and Kashmir. This is part of the peacekeeping work of the UN that goes on every day, and I feel it's directly of interest to us because we haven't got any place to hide anymore. If a war breaks out in the Middle East or if a war breaks out along the borders between India and Pakistan, we're going to feel the impact of it tomorrow.
Bill, I want to thank you for calling Night Call.
Thank you, Russ.
Mr. William Corney from Tullahoma, Tennessee, a listener on WFBM. And now, do you remember Mr. Ford, Bill?
Yes.
Well, we got him back on the line, and we'll see whether that line's cleared up.
Oh, I hope
Hello,
so.
Walter? Hello, Bill?
Yes, Walt.
Okay, Walt, you're back on. Let's see. Can you hear us better now?
Yes, Yes, I'd like to resume my conversation.
Yes, would you please? Mr. Walter Ford from
yes,
Baltimore,
indeed.
Maryland.
Argument between the occupation of the debt and the relative indifference that the United Nations had to that and the extreme furor that was created by the apparent imminent declaration of independence by Southern Rhodesia.
Couldn't quite get all that, Ross.
Basically, the same question that he asked before, the Southern Rhodesia situation and Tibet.
Yes. Well, on this one, we have been concerned for a number of years with what we call the question of Tibet and the UN. This has been before the General Assembly, and the invasion of Tibet and its takeover has been the subject of speeches and resolutions. And we are concerned with this because we are concerned with the freedom of any country, regardless of its size, although Tibet was never a member of the United Nations. As you recall, it was a quasi-dependency. At the same time, we're concerned with the question of Southern Rhodesia because the present situation, in the view of many member states, constitutes a threat to international peace and security, particularly if a small minority in the country do declare unilaterally independence.
While this unilateral declaration of independence isn't unique in history, the United States did the same thing. What reasons, I assume you are an American, Mr. Powell.
I am indeed.
Assumption?
No, that's true.
I beg your pardon?
Yes, that's correct.
Yes, I am an American.
What differences would you oppose or point out between the situation in Southern Rhodesia and the American Revolution?
Well, I think there are a number of differences, and I think the obvious and most important one was is this. In 1776, when we declared our independence, we did so as a nation, relatively homogeneous group of settlers here along the 13 colonies. What you have in Southern Rhodesia today... I would say that what you have in Southern Rhodesia today, according to the facts, you have a minority white population of 220,000. You have an African population of 4 million.
As opposed to the Indian population in North America, did we not?
I'm sorry, I can't get you.
I say we had a minority population of white people in North America in relationship to the Indian population of North America, did we not?
But this was a declaration of 13 colonies along the east coast of the United States. And I do not think at that time, if I read history correctly, there was any organized opposition to this in the colonies. Whereas in Africa today, and this is one of the reasons why the United Nations is concerned, the neighbors of Southern Rhodesia are concerned about the explosive nature of a unilateral declaration of independence that might bring violence to the whole of the continent.
Walter, we have other callers waiting. I want to thank you.
I think it's a similar argument, and I think the United Nations is purely hypocritical in their stand in juxtaposition with the Tibet question and the Southern Rhodesian question.
Okay. Walter, I have other callers. I want to thank you for your opinion. Mr. Walter Ford from Baltimore, Maryland, listener on WBAL. Let's go now again to Baltimore, Maryland, Mr. Chuck Lundy. Hello, Chuck. Speak right up. You're on night call, sir.
Hello?
Yes, sir. Your comment, please.
Is this Mr.
This is Mr. Gibbs. Speak right up. Chuck, you're on night call.
I want to ask Mr. Powell three questions.
I'm not going to have time for three. I can let you ask one.
Well, I would like to know why is the United Nations building and so forth within the United States boundaries?
Mr. Powell?
Why are the United Nations building within the boundaries of the United States?
Why are they not in neutral territories where other countries would be fairly represented and not be playing away from home in strange parts and so forth?
Right. Well, back in 1946, when the United Nations was being established, we had temporary headquarters in London. And it was a free choice of the members of the United Nations at the time that they came to the United States. There was a great debate went on, first of all, Should the United Nations be located in Europe, or should it be located in North America?
Why not in some neutral place, or some island, so it'd be accessible to all countries?
Well, I think one of the reasons that they wanted to be in the United States, the final vote was taken, and this was done by an overwhelming majority. They wanted to be in a good communication center. New York provides that. And also, the United Nations should be not in an isolated spot like an island. It should be in the heart of affairs. And in any event, we're here in New York, and we are in the heart of things.
Chuck, I want to thank you for calling Night Call. I'm sorry I don't have any more time.
I'm sorry, too. There's a couple more questions. I certainly would like that.
Well, thank you, Chuck. Mr. Chuck Lundy from Baltimore, Maryland, a listener on WBAL. And we have time for one more caller and one more question. Mr. Frank Forth in Indianapolis, Indiana, a listener on WFBM. Hello, Frank. Speak right up. You're on Night Call, sir.
Yes, I had to turn off my radio there.
Yes, sir. I have time for one question, Frank.
Time for one question?
Yes, sir.
First of all, I'd like to... That's all my questions, and I have time for only one. Do you feel that the communist, the fear that we are being given against communism is built up too much in our country?
Mr. Powell?
I'm sorry, I can't quite get that right.
Frank wanted to know whether or not we have built up the communist menace to too great a degree in this country.
Well, that's a very difficult question for me to answer just offhand. I feel that we do have a lot of unreasoning fears in this country of things that we don't know enough about. And I think that it's valuable to have discussions of this kind, of varying political systems, and to get full information on the implications of it. This is one of the fascinating things I find about working in the UN Secretariat, being able to sit down and talk to people from other areas, from other political systems. I don't necessarily agree with them, but I find in the long run that through discussion, I don't have these unreasoning fears that I might have otherwise.
Frank, thank you for calling Night Call.
Thank you.
Mr. Frank Forth from Indianapolis, Indiana, a listener on WFBM. And Mr. William Powell, I want to thank you for being our guest on Night Call.
It's been a delight
having you here.
I've enjoyed it a very great deal.
Tomorrow night on Night Call, we have as our guest Mr. Paul B. Edwards of UNICEF. Our topic, how UNICEF helps the world's children. Until then, this is Gibb wishing you good luck and Godspeed.
Night Call is produced by the Methodist Church in cooperation with the National Council of Churches and this radio station. As a radio forum dedicated to the frank discussion of vital issues of daily life. Night Call encourages its participants to express freely and responsibly their own personal opinions.